This is iUniverse Radio. iUniverse Radio is brought to you by iUniverse, the leading book marketing, editorial services, and supported self-publishing company. iUniverse Radio is produced by TogiNet Radio, on the web at toginet.com.
The title of the book, If Two Are Dead, and the author is Jonathan Cariel, and Jonathan joins us now on iUniverse Radio. Hello, Jonathan.
Good afternoon, sir.
Well, this is a great mystery novel. It's written in the first person. You say this about it: unsatisfied when his employer's baffling death is ruled a misfortune, Thomas Dordrecht tenaciously pursues one fortuitous clue, proves he was murdered, and apprehends the murderer. So this is the third in a series on the adventures of Thomas Dordrecht, it looks like, and you have more to come. But first of all, Jonathan, tell us a little bit about yourself and why you decided to write this kind of a story.
I studied history at New York University, American history particularly. I've always been interested in it, though I spent most of my life working as a computer support officer. And I have become fascinated with the late 18th century, particularly in the last several years. And as I proceed with the story, I get more fascinated with it. The idea of the series is that we take one particular individual, we focus on one particular individual, who is born in 1740 in New York, what is now the greater New York City, but then was a very small farming village in Kings County or Brooklyn. And he's of mixed Dutch and English ancestry, and he is going to become a shipper, a businessman, which puts him in the forefront of all the controversies that develop in New York City and America in the later 18th century. So that's how we got started here.
So a partner in the shipping firm that employs young Thomas Dordrecht is found dead in an alley, and that starts the whole thing, an alleyway in today's Manhattan.
That's correct, yeah. Right down there in lower Manhattan. The physical spot is still right there, but it's, of course, not an alleyway anymore. It's a skyscraper. the idea is that the death is completely inexplicable. No one can figure out why on earth this man should be dead. But he's not breathing. And the shock is enormous to the people in his firm, but they are so overwhelmed that they mostly cannot do anything about it. And Thomas, because of his insatiable curiosity and drive, decides he has to at least try and follow up with whatever clues there are. And he goes and finds it even more inexplicable as he proceeds. But then he is interrupted by a business trip that has been long planned and takes him to the Caribbean. And this was not a matter of a three-hour flight in those days. It was a matter of a long trip by sailing vessel. And so it's 6 months before he's able to resume the pursuit of the culprits and of the fact that it was a murder and who did it and how and why. All preoccupy him through the rest of the book.
What makes Thomas so interesting, so unique?
I think it's his openness, his willingness to consider all points of view, his empathy with people, his friendliness and open-mindedness, and not to mention his intelligence. You know, he's an autodidact. He's not a wealthy person or a highly trained individual, but he is working hard, like many of the period who basically decided they had to educate themselves, and that's what he's doing.
So we have what kind of issues that are dominating this story? Issues of the time?
Very much, because the year of this story is very specifically 1762, which is still 14 years before the revolution, and at a time when nobody is talking about revolution. There is no thought of independence from Britain at this point in time. However, there's an awful lot of annoyance with imperial edicts and taxes and behavior, particularly military behavior. And so these controversies do come up. They're things that people have to face in ordinary life, and particularly when they're trying to do big, serious international business, which our hero's just getting his feet wet trying to do.
And I guess that's why shipping is the focus.
That's one of the major reasons. The other is I happen to be fascinated with sailing and with ocean travel and so forth. But yes, shipping was the crux of many of the controversies between the imperial overlords and America at that time.
And most often murder mysteries involved, attorneys or police officers, detectives, but yours is a businessman.
That's right. I wanted to, first of all, there weren't any police in those days in New York City, but it could have been an attorney or something like that, but I wanted to stay away from that. I wanted to people be able to get into real life, if you will, to empathize with a real person's everyday experiences and how it would be disrupted by a necessity of trying to pursue the clues to an outrageous murder.
He didn't have any enemies, I guess.
No, not as yet, any
rate. Right.
No personal enemies. He might someday acquire them. Who knows if he gets into real trouble.
Now, he finds this clue, a very unusual clue on the victim.
Yes. It's a couple of playing cards that are just completely inexplicable. First of all, it's curious that the victim would even have playing cards because he's a very fastidious Quaker. But it happens that this particular fastidious Quaker likes playing cards. But they are not usual playing cards. They are the varlets. There are cards that are not part of the familiar 52-card deck that we know. And so they have been pulled out of a deck in order to play a game and stuffed into a book. And these particular cards, being unusual, are what provides an opportunity to pursue the rest of the deck and pursue the story and the culprit.
And your stories are narrated in the first person. Why did you go that route?
I wanted our hero to be able to speak directly to the reader, to make the reader totally drawn into his life and his way of thinking and his immediate reactions to things that I take out of the omniscient author, take the omniscience out of it, so that you're truly drawn into his mental purview. And I hope this works. It seems to be working for some of the readers, certainly.
Well, Thomas has a unique opportunity to be a hero for an 8-year-old boy, and that gets tied to even this murder. How? Tell us about that.
There's a ferry across the Hudson River in the same physical place that ferries operate today between Jersey City and downtown Manhattan, except there are a few blocks closer out today than they were then because of all the landfill on both sides of the river. But at any rate, this is the ferry in question is actually a very small sailing sloop, and it's only capable of holding a dozen passengers or so. And one of the passengers is a child who is a little too careless of what's happening and is busy jumping around and falls overboard. Now, the skipper of the ferry returns the sailboat to the child very quickly, and our hero simply leans overboard with his legs being held by somebody else and hauls the kid back in. He is able to reach over and grab the child out of the river. So this is not any kind of great heroism. It's just an effort that takes care, but it triggers a memory and a vision of what happened to Mr. Sproul, the victim. And I don't want to give away exactly how this all happens, but it has to do something with the fact that the incident with the child happens in the middle of the summer, and Mr. Sproul expired in the middle of the winter.
Well, now, he has an interesting group of friends. What are some of the key characters around Thomas?
He has been very lucky in one particular respect, in that he has wonderful mentors. And he's come up with a group of friends that are very unusual, but it does happen in New York City sometimes. He's 22. His partner, boss, I mean the partner of his firm, not the one who was killed, but the chief partner, is in his 60s, he and his wife, but they're from Philadelphia, and they are new to New York City and don't have any family here. Then there's a childless couple who are recently married in their 40s, also without family in the city. And our hero at 22 and his eccentric cousin who is 29. These folks find enough in common, and they have business interests in common, of course, that they group themselves together and become very, very close. And this is a wonderful thing, particularly for young Thomas, because it affords him a perspective on the larger world that he otherwise might not get.
Well, this is the third installment in the ongoing story. If Two Are Dead is the title, and a fourth one is in the making?
That's right. I'm getting very excited about the fourth one, which will be set in New York City during the Stamp Act crisis of 1765. It will be called Exquisite Folly. Again, a quote from Benjamin Franklin. And the Stamp Act crisis is, the more I read about it, the more outrageous it seems. The American Revolution very nearly started in November of 1765 in New York City. It was the guns were primed and pointed at crowds, and they could very easily have gone off. And it's a very fortunate thing that they didn't at that point in time. But rioting in New York City went on for days and weeks. It was a very, very volatile situation at that point. So our hero will be in the thick of it, and so will an outrageous murder.
Well, we appreciate your love of history. This is a great way to set this fiction, this murder mystery, at a very important time in our nation's history. If Two Are Dead is the title of this part of the series, and Jonathan Cariel, he is the author. Jonathan, tell us how to get your book.
It's available on Amazon.com, and it's all three of the books. My first two, also Die Fasting and Great Mischief, are all three available for Kindle. That's the most inexpensive way to get them, and through iUniverse, of course, and that's BarnesandNoble.com. So they are available, but you have to go and check it out on the internet. They can also look up, everybody is also urged to look up my website, jonathancariel.com, where I have lots of background information about the period and the historical characters and so forth, including photographs of the same areas today and so forth.
Well, thank you, Jonathan, for being with us on Author Talk.
Ah, thank you, sir. Great talking.